This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
One that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Claymore!
Oh! Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Monday Night Raw Review. Tonight, we have a brand new co-host with us tonight as he attended live in person in Hartford for Monday Night Raw, or really Monday Night Rollins, depending on how you look at it. It's Thomas White, who, listener of the show, has his own YouTube channel, very successful over there. And we're going to, of course, dive into Monday Night Raw and all the things that happened in person that maybe we didn't get to see at home. So, first of all, Thomas, how you doing, man?
Living life, having fun. Loving WWE.
Absolutely. And this is a good time to be a wrestling fan, and you attending live in person, there's a lot to get to, as I attended last week in Albany, New York. But before we get there, I want to just give a little bit of a background on you, give you time to get some information out to our listeners on, number one, your YouTube channel, if you want to give information about that, but also kind of how you became a wrestling fan.
Oh, first of all, my YouTube channel is youtube.com/whoisfrankie, Thomas Frank White. You can type both of those in the search bar that is going to come up. So anybody that's listening on my YouTube channel right now, what's up, everybody? I'm here. Became a wrestling fan. Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's who, oh my gosh. I was literally sitting on my couch and my stepfather was watching wrestling, and I was looking like, who is this guy? That's stomping, stomping and going crazy. And ever since I seen Stone Cold face, I became a huge fan. I a huge fan. I'm talking, I got the belts, autographs. I went all the way to Texas just to meet him for 5 minutes. It's crazy. Like, I'm a huge fan of Stone Cold. And ever since I watched Stone Cold, I've been watching everything. The Attitude Era is my era. So everything that he did really made me get into wrestling.
Well, you and me both, my friend. He is the reason that I became a fan. And I mean, starting in 97, he was just coming up. I timed it perfectly. I did meet him once as well. I was about 16 years old in an airport, and I was so starstruck. I had no idea what to say to him. I was just like, I had no idea. And he was actually with Deborah at the time, and they were going through a fight, and it was a bit of an interesting time. I'll tell that story another time. But so cool. I'm always interested to hear some stories about how people become fans and that kind of thing. But what are some of your really just locked in memories, some of the memories that you have of wrestling, whether it's in person or watching at home, that you look back and say, man, that is why I'm a wrestling fan?
Okay, so I can give you two things. I want to give you a fan experience, because when I met Stone Cold, and I have this on video too, I can send it to you. I said, Stone Cold, there's something that was a dream of mine, is that can me and you say, and that's the bottom line for Stone Cold said, so together on camera so I can have it forever. That memory, when we did that together, oh my gosh, I will never forget. I talk about that memory all the time. Like, that's a kid's dream to say, and that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so with Stone Cold next to you. And that was my greatest memory of all time. And I would say another thing I remember is, I hate to say this, but when The Rock knocked Stone Cold off the bridge, I didn't know, back then, I didn't know if wrestling was fake, so I cried.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was like 99, yeah.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. That's how you know, yeah, back when the business had a little bit of protection still left. I mean, before kayfabe, it was completely shattered. I know what you mean. I remember feeling some of those same emotions for different storylines when I was 14, 15, 16. Mm-hmm. I got to say, I'm jealous about the Stone Cold video. That is something obviously you will treasure forever. One that I'm jealous of. And I actually got to see him the last time live at Raw 25 in Brooklyn. That was the last time I was able to experience him at a much later age, of course. I was 33 years old at the time, 5 years ago. So, you know, it was a really cool time to say, hey, this is probably the last time I'm going to see him live in person. And it's a pop that you'll never forget in person. It's a pop that you just, it exceeds all other pops. There's nothing like his music hitting and see him come out and stomp mud holes and drop stunners and beer and all. I mean, it's just... It is one of the most successful, if not the most successful gimmick of all time. All right. Well, cool. I mean, I like the story again. Very jealous. But we dive into Monday Night Raw. Now, is this the first event that you've attended in a while, or have you been, you know, post-COVID, have you been able to attend any events?
For COVID, I didn't. But before I attended, this is like my 40th event. I go to a lot of them. So, this is definitely the recent one? Did I go to one last year? I think this is the recent one after COVID. Yep. Yeah, I think so. I've been to so many.
Oh, 40 events. It's 40 events in your lifetime, you're saying, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's still pretty impressive. A lot of money invested in that. Plus, you know, you go there, you got to park, you got to pay to eat, you're probably buying merch. I mean, yep. Do some quick math. That's a pretty good chunk of money over your lifetime you've invested in wrestling.
Mm-hmm. I hate it.
You hate it, but then you keep going back for more.
It sucks.
Well, cool. So you attend Monday Night Raw. And before Raw goes live at 8 p.m., you got to the building. Where were your seats?
118. It was literally, I had the best seats in the house. It's like, not the floor seats, but the level above, the small level above. So I seen over them.
Yeah, so, I had this. Yep, yeah. Same thing here. It is. It's because the floor, and you know, I'm 5 foot nothing. Like, I'm 5'7", 5'8" with shoes on a good day. So, I mean, if I'm not front row, I mean, I'm screwed because, you know, I can't see above everybody unless they're sitting down and I'm standing up. Yeah, I'm with you. Unless I'm ringside, I cannot do floor. So I'm with you on the first row, the first level above is a ideal for a wrestling event. Because if you're on the floor, you're like, oh, I'm on the floor. That's ringside. But then you're like row, you know, T or row U. It's like, why even bother? Right. Like it's actually way worse.
The worst seat. Yeah.
Yeah, it actually might be the worst seat in the house. I'd rather have nosebleed section than I would like in the back of the floor. So, but that said, so you get there. Was it sold out? Was it close to sold out? What percentage would you say of the arena was actually sold out?
It was sold out. Like at first, I'm like, okay, all right, people coming in. But then when like 8 o'clock started, it was completely sold out. I couldn't believe it. I said, this may be the most sold out I've seen Hartford.
Wow. Oh, so outside of the camera side where they have to tarp off some of the seats to set up the equipment, that's impressive. I mean, the fact that, Hartford is a fun wrestling city, but yeah, you're right. Over the last 10 years, selling out Monday Night Raws has not been kind of commonplace, and that's really encouraging to hear as wrestling, I think, is on an upward trend. And so when you get there, you get to your seats, it's a raucous crowd. Before I get into the show itself, kind of tell us about some of the merchandise, a lot of the signs you saw. Was there a theme in merchandise that you saw people wearing? Like, was it Judgment Day based? Was it Bloodline based? That kind of thing.
Oh, God. Rhea Ripley, mommies everywhere, Cody Rhodes, and Seth Rollins. That's it. I was the only one wearing Stone Cold. Well, yeah, a couple other people wearing Stone Cold, but them three was the main around the crowd.
Yeah, I would second that. I'm with you. Yeah, I mean, you and I sound like we basically had the same seats on top of the fact that I was wearing an Austin 316 t-shirt. I saw the same theme in Albany with a lot of mommy, be my mommy, Judgment Day, a lot of girls, younger girls dressing up with the dark makeup. I saw a lot of that. So yeah, which is awesome. I don't know if WWE is fully aware of how over Rhea Ripley is right now, especially with Dominic getting the massive heat. We'll dive into that. It's amazing. All right. So now, did you get any merchandise, or did you avoid the merch stand?
The whole time I avoided the merch stand, but my niece, she brought 5 shirts. 5.
for $600? I mean, like, that's
like $200 on shirts. And she brought the magazine and a cup. I'm like, are you serious?
Wow. She makes it worth it, right? I mean, even though you are paying probably 50% more going to the merch stand instead of just shopping on WWEshop.com, which always has discounts and always has sales. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's just kind of part of the experience, and some people don't care. And that's what makes it fun. Yeah. So what would you say, last question, kind of generally before we get into the start with Seth Rollins, as far as demographics go, was it a lot of families? Was it, the typical middle-aged man that was there? Like, what were the demographics like?
Families, kids, and men. There was single girls. It was families and men. That's it.
Okay. Yeah. No. That's typical. It's not usually a It's not usually like a girls' night out event, right? You're not going to see a bachelorette party typically, at a Monday Night Raw event. I mean, that's just not the demographic. But okay, cool. So let's dive in here. Monday Night Raw starts out with Seth Rollins coming out, and the pop seemed massive. You guys were all on board for the singing along. And what was it like to experience Seth Rollins coming out to the ring? Was it as loud as it sounded on TV?
100% loud, especially when they turned off the lights, like turned off the Titantron, everything for everybody to sing. I thought the roof was gonna go down. That's how loud it was.
Wow, that's actually, I mean, wow. I don't remember a pop that big at Albany. I mean, it was big, but not to the point where I was super impressed. It was just kind of like, all right, this is really good. It's what I expected, but it sounds like you guys even were in support of even more. That's awesome. Rollins is on an absolute roll right now. And Judgment Day comes out, though, after Rollins talked about how it's been a party nonstop. And Judgment Day came out, which were just consisted of Damian Priest and Finn Balor. And the one thing that Damian Priest said that I kind of laughed at, I don't know if you picked up on it, though, where Seth...
Hold on, I got it.
Yeah, no, go ahead. You can probably tell what I'm going to say
on
here.
Hold on, let me say this, because I wanted to be the one to say this. What in the world was Damian Priest talking about? He beat everybody?
Yeah.
Who did he beat? who did he beat? Hey, here we go. Y'all already know on my YouTube channel, I'm going to start. Y'all going to get me riled up already. Because I know how I am. What is he talking about?
I when he said that, I'm like, is that just a reflex? Do you not know what else to say? Because that was egregiously hilarious, but also embarrassing. When Priest said that Rollins is a deserving champion, he said, with a resume that speaks for itself, I'm like, okay, yep, Rollins is, absolutely, and he has a massive resume. And then Priest said, Rollins has beaten pretty much everyone that he's ever been in the ring with. And then Priest said, and I quote, but so have I. What? Give me examples, Priest. Who exactly are you talking about? You lost to Bad Bunny. You lost last week on Raw. Tell me exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I was hoping you'd pick up on that.
Oh, I analyzed the whole show. This is what I do. And when I sat there in my seat and he said that, I immediately went on Google and I said, I wanted to check out his wins and loss records. I'm like, what is he talking about?
Yeah. I'm just like, when he said that, I'm like, he didn't just say that. I'm like, are we supposed to be taking this seriously, or is he doing this to kind of troll us, knowing that he's lying because he's a heel? I mean, and then we're supposed to get angry that he's lying, but I think he was trying to come off like he's on equal footing with Seth, and I'm like, what? I know it was a quick line there, but I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I was sitting there going, are you kidding me? After that, we had Rollins say that Priest doesn't stand a chance against him if it's just the two of them, and Rollins challenged Priest to put his money where his mouth is and telling him to leave his crew backstage. And Rollins said it's probably for the best to leave Balor in the back because he doesn't fare well when they fight. And he poked Balor's shoulder in a callback to the old injury that he got. How did you enjoy and how did the crowd seem to like the setup for the main event here with the eventual Rollins versus Priest for the World Heavyweight Championship? How did you guys enjoy the opening segment here?
This is funny thing I want to say because it's kind of interesting. And when I sat there and looked at everybody cheering and stuff like that, they stopped cheering kind of when it was. It was like there was hype, but it would feel like there was only hype because of the music. And that also makes me think, is he this big, huge babyface only because of his music? Remove the music from Seth Rollins. Will he be this big baby face? Because the crowd wasn't too into the conversation that was happening. And I was sitting there thinking.
Well, I think right now it's the era of songs that the crowd can sing along to. I mean, you had Shinsuke Nakamura. That is one that is always fun. You take the music away from Shinsuke, and I think he's in trouble. You have, obviously, Cody Rhodes with the whoa, right? I mean, like, people love that. It is a fun entrance. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. With Seth Rollins, I don't know if Seth Rollins would be in trouble, but it is a big way in which he turn babyface. I think it's one of the reasons, not the only, and it's also a connection with the audience. It's a way to connect with the crowd, to interact with the crowd on a level that is unique and that doesn't always happen with every entrance theme. For example, like with Stone Cold's music, you don't hear people sing along to Austin's music. It just doesn't make sense. But you know what I mean? Like some themes just don't make sense. Like the crowd, it's not interactive in that way. But with Rollins, it's a way to connect with the crowd. So I don't know if he'd be in trouble, but it wouldn't help him, you know, it wouldn't help him, no. So.
Yeah.
All right, well, we moved on here to the Becky Lynch and Sonya Deville Money in the Bank qualifier. I'll leave it to you to give us your review on that live.
Horrible. Absolute horrible. I did not like this match at all. And the funny thing about this, Chelsea Green was getting more chance than this whole match. And she wasn't even a part of the match. And she was getting all the chance by the crowd.
What were people chanting, though? What were people chanting? Were they just chanting her name or chanting, like, slurs at her or something? Like, okay.
No, Chelsea Green. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, Chelsea Green, Chelsea Green. I'm like, what? Oh my gosh, I feel like I'm sorry if you get a one star because of this episode, because I can't help myself with some of the negative stuff I have to say. I just have to get off my chest. I'm sorry.
No.
Say this now.
It's a safe platform for negativities. Yeah, so go ahead.
Becky Lynch, I have to say something. I feel like I don't see the hype, because that match she did not wrestle good at all. And I just felt bad. And another thing, she can't wrestle to me. I'm sorry to say it. I don't like it. I don't like how she wrestles. I don't like it. And I know a lot of people might be like, oh, Frank, I don't like you no more. But I just don't see it.
Well, I think Becky Lynch has been in a bit of a slump creatively. I don't think there's any question about that. Over the last several months. I mean, we have Trish Stratus now who's looming, and I actually thought that when Trish came out with Zoe Stark, I'm like, oh, this is going to cost Becky the match. Instead, it didn't, and I'm thinking, well, why the hell are they here? Becky Lynch won anyway, which was weird. It doesn't mean that somebody in a second chance qualifier, which always happens the week before the event, we still probably have Sonya get in anyway. But that said, it was just surprising that, like, so what was the point of Trish Stratus's presence if it wasn't going to cost Becky the match? I'm with you. The match, to me, I'm not as down on Becky Lynch's wrestling, because to be fair, sometimes it does help when the opponent is much better than Sonya Deville. Sonya Deville, I don't think, is a bad wrestler. I think she's really good on the microphone. I think there's more value than they've shown us with her over the last several months of just losing match after match after match after match. But at the same time, you're right. Chelsea Green, I think, is slowly becoming the star of that duo. And Becky Lynch working with somebody like Sonya isn't going to produce a match that is better than, say, Becky Lynch versus, you know, Bianca Belair.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But were you surprised by the outcome, even though Trish and Zoe Stark came out?
When Trish came out, I honestly thought the same thing. You thought, like, oh, she's about to lose. This is it. And when they just sat there the entire match, everybody in the crowd was like, what was that for? Why?
Yeah.
What was the point?
it did seem... I don't know. Let me ask this: when you heard Trish's music and you saw the crowd saw Zoe Stark and Trish, did they cheer? What was the reaction to Trish Stratus and Zoe Stark?
Everybody was so happy to see Trish Stratus, especially the older people in the crowd, because, you know, Attitude Era. I stood up when she came out. I stood up like, oh, here we go. And she didn't come down to the ring. That disappointed me. I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm. Did people chant "Thank you, Trish"?
Nope.
No.
Not okay. Once.
All right. Maybe Albany's an exception. We did, and during the break, and then she told us to basically shut up. So I was chanting "Thank you, Trish." I was on board for it, but she basically told us to shut the hell up. So I appreciated it even more when she doubled down. But okay, so yeah, Becky Lynch wins. She's now a part of the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And beat Sonya Deville in about 11 minutes. And then after that, we got, let's see, we had some backstage segments with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, who were interviewed by Byron Saxton about the whole Bloodline situation. But Ludwig and Giovanni Vinci quickly interrupted Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and said that they would be a problem for the tag team champions. And then Owens got all fired up and he started losing it and saying, you guys want to fight, basically, and then he ends up having a match with Gunther. And I've got some thoughts on this that are a little bit more positive than the last segment here, but I'll toss it to you.
Gunther's a superstar. I feel like he's it. And the only thing I had a problem with was the promo. I'm kind of getting annoyed with this whole energetic yelling every time you pick up the microphones, Kevin Owens. It's kind of bothering me because it seemed like every time you pick up the microphone, he has to yell, challenge, you know, for a fight and things like that. But overall, the match was good. Kevin Owens could put on a show. Gunther is amazing. He need to be world champion soon. That's all I have to say. But overall, it was a great match, and the crowd was into it, so into this match. But when Gunther won, they was upset. But when Gunther came out, there was cheering. I still don't understand the hate. Why people hate Gunther until this day? I still don't know.
I've tried to break it down here on the show many times, and all I can think of is his entrance isn't very flamboyant. He doesn't have a sing-along song, but everything he talks about is respect, respect, respect. He almost never cheats to win, although this week you could make a case that if it wasn't for, Ludwig Kaiser, he gets the stunner and then we get the roll-up by Gunther. But that's not necessarily cheating. I mean, he didn't pull the tights from what I understand. It seemed like a clean victory from how he pinned him, but sure, this is it trended more heel. And more often than not, he has not cheated to win, and he's always about respect and making sure that those opponents he faces are worthy of the championship. And I'm like, yeah, this is what babyfaces should be promoting, and they don't. And they just willy-nilly give opportunities to anyone and everyone, which is, I think, detrimental long-term. But we absolutely have a world champion in the making. We have Gunther, who is, I would say, at least on the Raw side of things, probably going to be world heavyweight champion within the next 6 to 12 months in defeating Seth Rollins or whoever once they get to that point. I don't know if he'll face Roman Reigns anytime soon. They're on separate brands and that kind of thing. But I think Gunther, I'm with you. He is a future world champion inside of a year.
I agree.
But the match itself, I'm with you. This match, I would argue this match was pay-per-view quality. On paper, I don't even remember these two even coming together. You know, Kevin Owens and Gunther coming together was something that I could sign up for again. I don't know when they'll go back to it, probably whenever it makes sense storyline-wise. But these two together, they put on an amazing matchup, physical. The beatdown that Gunther gave Kevin throughout the match, and Kevin Owens showing heart throughout the match, constantly coming back, trying to come back. It was a well-told story. You guys seem super into it. I would agree, though, if we're going to put a little bit of a fly in the ointment, the Kevin Owens over-the-top promos, and like you said, he's always, it's like he drank four bottles of Red Bull before every promo, and he needs to go over the top and make comments and go off the wall. Like, I don't mind that, you know, every once in a while, but it has been a trend for the last several weeks, and it's like, calm down. I mean, like, I don't need everything to be meta and kind of funny. Like, just be a little bit more normal. I would agree with that if we're going to be criticizing. Yes.
Yeah, I agree. That bothers me a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's just the yelling every week. Just gotta relax, like you said. Just relax. And funny thing, I said this should have been a main event. I'd rather that than the main event what we're going to get into later in the show, because Damian Priest so hard.
I would agree with that. I mean, in hindsight, Kevin Owens and Gunther is a better main event on paper than Damian Priest and Seth. But the problem is you're not going to put the World Heavyweight Championship not in the main event. So that's the only reason that was the main event. So, yeah, we'll get to that. But overall, yeah, I loved this match as a whole. I could absolutely sign up to see these two fight again. Even Sami Zayn and Gunther. Maybe that'll happen next week. But this whole story shifting from the Bloodline to Imperium, it's a nice shift. But yeah, Kevin Owens just needs to kind of tone it down. I would agree. All right, moving on. We got Byron Saxton interviewing the women's tag team champions Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler backstage. Saxton asks what it means to be champions, given their friendship, and Baszler called it destiny, and Rousey said in a very, very scripted, almost like off the like it was like she was reading from a sheet. I can't stand Ronda Rousey's promos. But she said it was past time to legitimize the titles and invited any team with the balls to take them on. And then Caden Carter and Katana Chance showed up, and we got a match here with Ronda Rousey and Shayna versus Caden Carter and Katana Chance in a non-title match. What did you guys think in person?
Because this is actually going to be a mind-blowing experience right now. The crowd enjoyed it. They enjoyed this match, and I couldn't believe it. I feel like them. What's their name again?
Caden Carter.
What's their name again?
And Katana Chance.
Yes, them two. They're gonna be the tag team champions soon. I like them a lot, and the crowd respectfully cheered for Ronda Rousey. A lot. And I don't know if it showed that on TV, but they was going crazy for Ronda Rousey.
At least in my estimation, it wasn't overwhelming boos, but they must have drowned out a little bit of that, because that didn't seem like an overwhelming theme for me during the match. I had the same experience in Albany, maybe not to that degree, but I think it comes down to star power. I mean, the star power is always what draws, always what makes people emotionally invested and causes a reaction. So I think it's because of her star power that is what's happening. But the match itself, I really enjoyed this. Caden Carter and Katana Chance, I think, had easily their match of their career on Raw. Given, I mean, they've had one, but that's not saying much. But it really was. I mean, this was a. As they said, a statement victory or a statement match, and it was. I really enjoyed watching Katana Chance, who did the. I don't know if it was like a, was it a 450 splash that she did?
Oh my gosh, that was amazing! I'm not going to lie, that was amazing. It was a 450 while the person was holding. Oh my god, that was crazy! That was crazy. When I seen it, I said, "Wow."
I don't think I've ever seen a woman deliver a 450 splash. I've seen moonsaults. You know, I've seen all the things that the men can do, except 450. I've not seen a 450 splash from a woman, I don't think, ever.
Never. I've never seen it. That was amazing.
Yeah, it was, and it really makes you excited. They bring another level of athleticism to the whole dynamic of the women's tag team division. And what I actually did like, I criticized Ronda's promos because they're usually generally awful, but I like the content or the piece of the content when she said that they're going to bring respect and relevance back to the women's tag team championships. No longer are they going to be forgotten, and I'm like, well, good, thank you. It should be a focus. It should be something that isn't. You know, a championship that goes on a team and then the team disappears for 6 months and you're like, oh, that's right. The women have a tag team championship. You know, it has happened time after time after time. And you're like, oh, fine, they're going to do something. And then they don't. Hopefully this is actually the time when they do, because I want the women's tag team championship to actually mean something. So that stood out to me and I was like, okay, cool. I hope that actually happens.
Well, I agree. I really do agree.
All right. So, oh, and by the way, the name of that group, the name of the team of Cade Carter and Katana Chance is Life of the Party, if you guys didn't catch that. So it's not really something that works for me. Life of the Party is too kind of, I don't know. It's too, it's a little too, I don't know what the word is. It's not, I can't take the team seriously if you're called Life of the Party. Like, Not my thing, but anyway. All right. We got, let's see, so many other little things here, but Ricochet was shadow boxing in the gorilla position when he was interrupted. Bronson Reed took issue with Ricochet being in the Money in the Bank, and Ricochet pointed out they both had qualifying matches, and then Shinsuke showed up. Reed said Nakamura caught him on a bad night, and the next time they meet, there'll be a different result. Reed walked away. Ricochet said he wouldn't give Nakamura anything but another L. So then we got Ricochet making his entrance for his match against Nakamura. Again, once again, I'll toss this to you for Shinsuke Nakamura versus Ricochet.
I would say it was an okay match. The crowd was not into it. The only thing they cheered for was Nakamura's entrance. But once they started wrestling, he did some, Ricochet did a couple, you know, flips that made people say, ooh, ow. But overall, nobody was cheering. People was getting up, going to get snacks. Like, it was literally a complete boring match to the crowd. And Reed saved the match. He saved the match because it was so boring. I was happy to see him. That's how boring it was.
Yeah, I mean, this also did not show up on the Hulu version. I had to go search this out. I mean, that tells you where they value this matchup, which, to be fair, in the scheme of what's going on in WWE, I probably would have cut it as well. You can't have everything on the Hulu version. But, yeah, having Reed come out, the match was about 8 minutes. It ended in a no contest, apparently. But Reed coming in and splashing Nakamura in the corner to end the match, I would agree. I mean, it starts to create a feud that you're semi-mildly getting interested in Nakamura versus Reed, because last week, Reed beat Nakamura, Nakamura beat Reed, rather, and we're thinking, well, usually, you know, Bronson Reed should get the victory. He's an up-and-comer. How does he not get the victory? Well, he's getting his revenge this week, and this is a bit of a mid-card program going on with Bronson Reed and Shinsuke, so you know what? I don't mind it. It helps elevate talent, and you know, maybe it overachieves. But I would agree. Yeah, watching the match, you guys didn't seem overly excited. No reason to really get super excited. But Bronson Reed really, I would agree, kind of made this whole segment a little bit more interesting. I would agree. All right. Yeah.
Can we do something Ricochet? Yeah,
yeah. You would imagine. Yeah.
I just have to say this right now, because a Ricochet, I don't know what's going on. They need to really change him, change something. He need a huge change, because how talented he is in the ring, nobody cheers for him, and I feel bad.
I know, with how athletic he is, and he's a dude that he looks the part. He in the ring has it all together from an athleticism standpoint. He just hasn't found the character, and honestly, that is the most important part. There's been a lot of guys throughout the years that have been awful in the ring, but have been awesome in character. I mean, talking about one of the greatest of all time, Hulk Hogan wasn't exactly an athlete. I mean, he knew how to put on a show, but some of the guys in the history of WWE haven't exactly been the greatest athletes, yet they found the character, and I think it's the opposite problem which is a worse problem for Ricochet, where he has the athleticism and he has the look, but he doesn't have the character. That connection with the crowd doesn't exist outside of just, ooh, cool, he's the guy that does really cool moves. That's not how you want to be known. You know, like, people look at you just like fireworks, but they don't have an emotional connection to it. And I think, unfortunately for Ricochet, yeah, that is a big gaping hole for his connection with the crowd. It's not there. So, all right. So next up, we got a little backstage segment with Chad Gable, who corrected Maxine Dupree on the pronunciation of Otis's name. And some other weird stuff happened with the Viking Raiders and Valhalla. But then Cody Rhodes was shown walking backstage dressed in a suit and wearing a cast over his left arm. And Graves said that Miz TV was up next. And Miz stood in the ring, introduced Cody Rhodes from the Miz TV segment. And we got Cody Rhodes coming out. So I'll leave it to you there. What did you think of Cody Rhodes' entrance? What did the crowd think?
Well, great to see it live, and the crowd was electric. Like, it was so loud. I don't know who got a bigger pop in between Seth Rollins and Cody Rhodes, but the crowd was so into it. They didn't want to sit down. They stood up during the Miz TV segment. They couldn't stop cheering. It was out of control. I've never seen anything like that. Like, besides, you know, Stone Cold and stuff like that, but Cody Rhodes. Anyone I don't like his babyface character, they love him. They love him. And, oh, fun fact. I was the only one that didn't do the whoa thing in the whole crowd. I just sat there because I don't like it.
Well, I mean, yeah, you certainly are in the minority there. I wasn't going to do it either, and then I just got caught up in the moment, and I'm like, damn it. And I felt very guilty after. However, when he did this, when I was in Albany, he did say, so Albany, what do you want to talk about? I booed that as loud as I could. But for you guys, he didn't get to that segment. He wasn't able to do his so Hartford, what do you want to talk about? Thank God. I mean, at least from at home, I'm like, wow, a week we don't have to hear that weird catchphrase that he's trying to make happen, which isn't going to happen. So, but what did you guys think of, or what did you think sitting there watching the Miz TV segment? I mean, there was obviously tension between Miz and Cody, with Cody calling Miz Mike and Miz correcting him and saying his first name is the last name is the Miz. That was a little bit cute, I guess. And then Cody took a jab at the balls of the Miz, and Rhodes assumed that the Beast was on his annual hibernation and we wouldn't be seeing him for a while, which apparently that's true. They're going to reignite things towards SummerSlam. But Miz said he loves surprises and he has one for Cody, and that was even better than the Beast. And he introduced Dominic Mysterio. What was the crowd absolutely nuclear? You guys wouldn't even let him speak.
Oh my gosh. So when Dominic first came out, they see his nose and they started going crazy. They started going insane. I said, like, it was literally how you hear on TV is exactly in person. They was going ballistic. It was so bad. It was so bad that people were sticking up their middle fingers at him. I was looking around. I couldn't believe it. I said, oh my God, they really don't like him.
Like, legit. Yeah.
Legit. Like, it's legit. I hate you. Sticking up their middle fingers. Like, my eyes got big because I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
That is heat. That has to be the best feeling ever if you're a heel and you get that kind of heat. I mean, that is the biggest compliment you can possibly get. I don't think anyone expected Mysterio to be this good of a heel, Dominic, to be this good of a heel or get this big of a reaction as a heel, to where the point where every single week the crowd won't let him speak. Now, does it have something to do with kind of every crowd watching the previous Raws and going, oh, we're going to do that, we're not going to let him speak? Probably a little bit of that, where it's a bit of a social contagion. Everyone wants to follow the previous crowd and outdo the previous crowd, which is fine. But at the same time, they're still doing it. And for a heel to get that kind of reaction where every week they're not letting him speak, I can't remember a heel in my lifetime that consistently, not just one or two offs, that is constantly getting so much heat he can't speak.
Hey, this is the first. And when he smacked Cody Rhodes, I mean, I thought they would have to escort Dominic Mysterio backstage because I thought people was going to hop the barricade. They wanted to get him so bad.
Oh, my God. Well, what was the dynamic with Rhea? Because I know people love Rhea. She is the face of the women's division right now. We haven't even seen anywhere close to her best days yet. But her and Dominic are kind of bipolar, where people love Rhea. They love to hate her, but they could turn her babyface on a split second. Dominic right now is the biggest heel, in some ways bigger heel than Roman Reigns. And so what was the crowd doing with Rhea Ripley? Were they cheering her, booing her because of the association? How did that work?
Okay, there was cheering. I don't know if WWE took this out, but half of the crowd was saying, let's go mommy, and the other side was saying, F you, Dom. So I don't know if they took that out because I didn't rewatch it, but that's what was happening. There was cheering for Rhea, but it was a lot of F you, Doms.
Wow. I mean, that is, considering there's a lot of families there, that's pretty heavy. Right? I mean, that you have a crowd like that is not unanimously, but you have sections of the crowd that are chanting that, knowing that there's families there, and you're bringing kids that are, you know, you're hearing all these chants, and you're like, Daddy, what are they saying? And you have to, you know, that's telling. That is a telling, awesome sign for Dominic. I mean, I actually hope at some point they make him world champion. I mean, the heat he would get as a champion, and they haven't even done that yet, would be, it would be like a nuclear reactor. I mean, it would be,
you need, yes, to get a briefcase.
Yeah, I hope he wins. I know he's not, actually in the match yet, right? I don't think he's officially, not yet, okay.
Not yet, you better be.
But yeah, I hope in the next several months before 2023 is over, I don't think he'll capture the world championship, although we wouldn't hate it. But I want him holding some kind of gold. I mean, him as a champion would be brilliant. I mean, it's already great. But so, yeah, this Cody and Dominic dynamic seems to be something that they're going to grab onto while they're waiting for Brock Lesnar to return sometime around Money in the Bank, at Money in the Bank, to screw Cody Rhodes, or right after, and they go into SummerSlam. So how do you personally like this probably short-term program with Dominic and Cody Rhodes?
I actually really like it because I feel like Dominic the Weasel is going to, for some reason, okay, so I feel like he's going to enter the Money in the Bank, and he's going to win, but Brock is going to mess him up, you know, mess up Cody for Dom to win. But this whole segment with them two, I think it'll be great. It'll be great. The fans going to adapt to it. I think it's going to be good, but they better not let Cody win something. Like, I don't want to see it. Because Dom is too hot right now.
Yeah, well, there's probably, you know, if they do, and it seems like they are going to do, if Cody and Dom aren't in the Money in the Bank ladder match, if it's just a one-on-one match with them at Money in the Bank, I think Brock Lesnar comes in and screws Cody, whether it's Money in the Bank match itself or if it's a one-on-one, and Dominic's going to get the victory directly because of Cody or because of Brock Lesnar. So I think Brock Lesnar is going to screw Cody one way or the other at Money in the Bank, and Dominic's not going to lose.
Hey, man, I'm laughing right now because, oh my gosh, if he beats Cody Rhodes, I can imagine the promo.
That's what I'm saying.
The next time he's on TV.
That's what I'm saying. What also is helping, he's growing his hair out. He looks like this little punk. He's got a perfect, just a little, he looks like a young kid that runs his mouth and then hides behind his posse. I mean, he fits it perfectly. It's an amazing dynamic right now. They have something very special with Dominic Mysterio. And if he beats Cody, and I fully expect him to beat Cody if they have a one-on-one match, it's going to be direct, of course, because of Brock Lesnar. So he's not going to beat Cody Rhodes outright. So Brock comes in, screws Cody, F5s him. Here comes Dominic, 1-2-3. Dominic gets the victory, and he's able to lean on that victory, you know, for several weeks. That's going to be a lot of fun. All right. Well, moving on here, we did get Zoe Stark with Trish versus Natalya for a Money in the Bank qualifier for the women's side of the Money in the Bank ladder match. And this match lasted just under 4 minutes with Zoe Stark beating Natalya, hitting the Z360. What did you think of this match? Of course, a little short, but to the point, and I'm sure, you know, well, not something that's very memorable, but just give me your thoughts on it.
Natalya got zero cheers. When she came out, I had my down, and I picked my head up, and I looked to the left of me, and I was talking to this lady, and I said, dang, she's not coming out yet. Maybe she, Rhea Ripley beat her up backstage. Then she got in the ring. So she got no cheers to the point that I thought she didn't even come out. Like, it was that bad. And the match, it was okay. The ending, I didn't like it because Trish missed the kick, literally missed the whole kick. So Natalya had to sell the kick that she faked like she got hit in the back of the leg. And Zoe finished her. It felt like these main roster girls can't sell the finisher like the NXT girls. So I don't know. It was okay.
It's funny. I'm reading a review on this particular match, and it said, I guess everyone in the crowd blew out their vocal cords during booing Dom. The only noise they made during this match was when Natalya applied the sharpshooter. Ouch. So I guess you can vouch for that. I mean, you guys absolutely didn't make a peep until the sharpshooter, and then the match actually ended. So yikes.
Yep.
All right. Well, something that got a little bit more of a reaction. Paul Heyman was backstage in the dressing room. How Paul Heyman is coming to Raw regularly now makes no sense. But here we go with the disintegration of not just the bloodline, but the disintegration of the damn draft already. But Heyman looked into the camera and he said he invited us to join him on SmackDown, where the family drama would play out when Jey Uso makes his historic choice. And he said Jay would choose to stand by his brother, Solo Sikoa. And he said, you can share a womb with Jimmy, but Jay will never be closer in life to Jimmy than he is to his tribal chief. And he'll acknowledge that fact on Friday Night SmackDown. Any thoughts? I mean, of course, just kind of a backstage segment with Paul Heyman, but any thoughts on that?
What's the point of Paul Heyman getting drafted to SmackDown? Why is he showing his face on Raw every week now? I don't understand. He basically just gave it away that Jey Uso is going to be on Jimmy's side by doing that segment. Any smart person know that. It's common sense. He just gave it all away. Like,
yeah. And here's the thing. The argument against it, and I understand the argument as well, they're trying to capitalize on big ratings from SmackDown. They know it's the hottest storyline in WWE. So the argument against it is they're trying to continue it on Raw. But again, these are the things that you sacrifice, and you know you're sacrificing when you have a draft, that if you're going to be beholden to your own damn rules, that these are the things that you're going to be tempted to do, but realize, hey, this person was drafted. Either we have a draft or we don't. You know, like, and I understand the reasons for it, but I still wouldn't have had Heyman there. You can accomplish the same thing with video packages. If they want video packages to remind us what happened on SmackDown, that's totally fine. But don't keep bringing somebody on the opposite show that was drafted the opposite show to the opposite brand. It just makes no sense, and it just angers me so much.
Yep.
All right. Well, we got the end of Sheer.
I agree.
Veer Mahan and Sangha coming out with Jinder, and while Cedric and Shelton were already in the ring, Veer and Sangha attack Shelton and Benjamin before the bell, and the referee checked on Alexander and Benjamin and said there wouldn't be a match. So they just delivered a beatdown, but no actual match. Any thoughts on this?
When did Shelton and Benjamin become this weak that you get thrown out the ring? And they lay down for what, 3 minutes? I was like, are you serious? Shelton Benjamin, really? This is how he put no effort in fighting back. I couldn't believe it. I like them as a tag team though. The end of the year, but I just didn't like. Maybe I'm the Grinch. Maybe I just dig too deep into stuff.
That's why we do podcasts, Thomas. I mean, like that's why we do podcasts, because we are the ones that dig. We're supposed to. I mean, that's the fun of it. I mean, yeah. So. So yeah, I mean, I, as far as this segment goes, I know why they did it. I mean, Shelton and Cedric aren't exactly, you know, the Road Warriors right now. I mean, they have not done a whole lot of relevant things on TV in a long time, and the industry is on the rise. And how WWE booking goes is this: the new team that's trying to get momentum is going to crush any and all newcomers or establishment teams. You know, until they finally meet their match. And obviously Cedric and Shelton are not where they're going to take their first loss. They're just another stepping stone to get the Indusheer to eventually maybe get a tag team title match against Kevin and Sammy at some point, maybe, you know, later in the summer or into the fall. But that's obviously the point of this. So, all right. Then we get Seth Rollins. He's shown putting his jacket on. He's grabbing his belt. And we got Seth Rollins versus Damian Priest for the World Heavyweight Championship. And this was a long match. When I say long, long in terms of Raw expectations, it was 20 minutes. I mean, this was long. But I'll toss the floor to you.
Yeah, the match was actually, it was pretty good. Okay, I'm not going to talk bad on Damian Priest because he actually put on a good match with Seth Rollins. It was a great match. The crowd was behind it. I was behind it. I knew he wasn't going to win, but of course they had the oh my gosh moments. He actually could pull this off. Seth Rollins can lose in 1 week. That was not happening, but they had it. The only problem I had with this match is I don't like how they make the finishers look so weak. The pedigree, Damian Priest breaking out the pedigree, I really didn't like that at all.
I'm glad you brought that up, yeah.
Especially towards the end of the match. You could have won the match with the pedigree. Literally 1 minute, like, I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, I don't know when the pedigree has been relegated to, like, the zigzag, right? Like, I mean, I have no idea why or how it has been downgraded so much. And I mean, that's just an industry-wide problem. I don't even know if it's specific to WWE, but it's a larger problem, I think, than anyone cares to talk about or even cares about. It's just the fact that finishers are constantly kicked out of. Cody Rhodes won't even go for a pinfall until he uses his finish like three times, and then he'll try to attempt a pinfall. It really diminishes when people should believe a match is going to end, and it diminishes the instances in which a finish is kicked out of, because you see it so much that when you can't tell me now that not just you, the collective, you, the fans, that when you see someone hit a finish in a big match that you're thinking, oh, that's definitely it. You're going, nope, they're at least kicking out once, especially in a high profile match. You know, it's I don't like that. I want to feel like finishes do exactly that. They finish matches. And I know the pedigree for Seth hasn't exactly won him a lot of matches as of late. It's kind of his signature move, not his finish move. But I just don't like the pedigree, which has been utilized for 20-plus years as a money finish, now being used as kind of just this transition spot.
It just goes to show you that these new wrestlers, this generation of wrestlers, can't come up with no finishing move because they take all the attitude. Finish the most. Just saying.
Yeah, the stunner. Yeah. it's yep. Shawn Michaels' finish has been now really just been used as much as a clothesline. So, I'm with you. But I'm with you. You know, let me say some positive things about Damian Priest. This may have been his best match to date. Granted, Seth Rollins is an absolute ring general, and having Seth Rollins as an opponent helps things out. But you know what? To Damian's credit, he held up his own, and there were moments in the when he hit South of Heaven, I'm thinking, all right, there's like still a 99% chance that Seth is going to retain here, but they set it up so deep into the matchup that I'm thinking, oh crap, like, wait a second. Hey, that's all I could ask for in a match like that, where you know the outcome is for sure, that you have just that brief moment of, wait a minute. So when he hit South of Heaven, did you feel the same thing, even for just a split second? Did you sense the crowd felt the same thing?
I'ma be honest with you. I felt it because it was 10:59.
Oh no!
I said, we got the clocks. I said, hold on. I said, wait, hold up. He's about to win this at 10:59.
Yeah, in a shock. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the time often will spoil the ending of things because you're like, all right, this is wrapping up right now. Well, whoever hits the finish is going home. They're going to win. That actually is a hell of a way to, because you see the, I mean, those of you that don't know, if you haven't been to an event that you're on the opposite side of the camera setup, there's a time that tells you the atomic clock. They have like a big atomic clock setup of like the time. And so the wrestlers can always see it. You know how, exactly how much time you have or whatever, or what time it is, Eastern Standard Time, whatever. And so if I saw 10:59 and I saw him hit South of Heaven, I probably would have thought the same thing and be like, oh, my God. Yeah. that would have put the fear of God in me for sure. But overall, you know what? I give Damian Priest credit. In the loss here, he will be elevated, and that's a good thing. It is about making new stars. I'm all for it. I have no problem with how Damian Priest lost. He should have lost the way he did in a long, competitive match to help elevate Damian Priest. And he can use this, even in a loss, he can use this as a stepping stone to the next step. And what did you guys think, or what did you think specifically about Finn Balor having a bit of a stare off with Seth Rollins? Maybe that is his next opponent at Money in the Bank.
Next opponent, and the crowd was actually ooh and like uh oh, this about to happen. It should be, because didn't he lose his title from injury? That like he had to like forfeit his title or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think he should be up for the for Seth Rollins.
Yeah, there is poetry there, and Seth poked fun at Balor, who won the Universal title when it was first created out of nothing, when they had the brand split, and back in 2016, I want to say, if I'm not mistaken, 2017, somewhere around there, and Balor got injured in the match that he won the title, and he had to relinquish the belt 24 hours later, and that was in a match against Seth Rollins the night before. So there is absolutely a story that I'm sure that they will bring to the forefront with these two. And of course, the match quality with Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor is going to be second to none. You're not even blinking an eye about the concern about a concern regarding the match quality. It should go 15, 20 minutes and be a classic. I mean, those two are absolute professionals.
Yeah, I agree. And the ending, I don't know what. When did it end for you guys?
So after Seth had a stare down with Finn Balor, he left, walked up the ramp, and that was kind of it. What did you guys see after that?
Seth Rollins comes back to the ring. He picks up the microphone and say, you need to come in the ring and shake my hand and show some respect. And basically telling Damian Priest, like, you know, you did a good job. Then they shook hands. I couldn't believe it. That was our dark match. They shook hands like baby faces and walked out together.
Damian Priest and Seth?
Yes, I got the footage for you. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I know it's just for the local crowd. I mean, at that point, it's off the air. But, like, why? I mean...
That was our dark match. I couldn't believe it. I said, yeah, this is how you're going to end Monday Night Raw for us. You're going to bring Damian Priest back out to the ring. Y'all going to shake each other's hands and say, oh, we had a good fight. It was like, really? I'm like, really?
At that point, you know, what you do is, I mean, if it's for the local crowd and essentially it's anything goes, nothing matters because it's not televised. I would just have Dominic come back down, start running his mouth, and him get to take a stomp from Seth. Just a single move. Send the crowd home super happy. That's what I would have done instead of having, you know what I mean? Like what?
I couldn't believe it.
Oh my God. That makes little to no sense. Wow. Did you get stuck in the parking lot after? Stuck in a parking garage? Or did you take an Uber? Or how'd you get home?
I was smart. So I left the car at my mom's job. So I just walked through the park to get the car. So I was not stuck in nothing.
Oh, nice.
I was fine.
Yeah, that's always the worry. I'm sure you saw it in every wrestling event. It's almost like a race to your car. The second that the main event match is over, you see probably a good 50% of the people run for the exits to try to get their car to get the hell out of there. Did that not happen too, where most people probably didn't stick around?
I was running. Nope. Once they 1, 2, 3 and Seth Rollins music came on, everybody was rushing out.
Yeah, because nobody wants to. We've all been there. I've been there too, where you're sitting in a parking lot, you can't even back up, you're in a parking garage on level 7, and you know that you can't even, you're going to be a good 45 minutes before you get out of the parking garage. We've all made that mistake before. So yeah, I mean, it's always a rush to see who can get out of there the fastest before, you know the good old crap hits the fan. But overall, I mean, what did you think, kind of finishing our thoughts here, what did you think about Monday Night Raw? How did you feel? Are you glad you went?
Oh, I am. I'm glad that I went, and I forgot to say this in the beginning of the show because I got security that works at the Excel Center, and I know the head security. And once I sat down 2 hours, everybody was texting me, "Vince is here. Vince is here." I'm like, "Oh gosh." So, by the word of the security, main security guard, Vince was there on Monday Night Raw.
Oh my God!
In the back. So, just in case anybody was wondering, he was 1,000% there.
That, I mean, that to get it from security, I mean, you're not getting it from some random website or whatever. You're getting it firsthand word of mouth. That makes me very kind of discouraged as a fan, knowing, and I have sensed a lot of Vince's sense of humor and the way he ran shows. There's been a lot of that over the last several months, and ever since he came back as, you know, part of the board of the directors and said, "Oh, I'm not going to get in the weeds. It's a very high level creative nonsense." Yeah, that's that's oh god,
he's there.
Oh man. One more thing. What did they do during commercial breaks? For us, they did like a DX competition. They did the People's Eyebrow. Did they do that kind of stuff during the commercial breaks to keep the crowd entertained?
Well, I wanted to bring this up because I remember what you said about the whole DX thing. Yes. And how weird it was. They did it. And I was like, are you serious? They got the kids doing it. They didn't know what was that, like what they was doing. This kid next to me said, "Who's Shawn Michaels?"
Oh, no, no.
I'm like,
no.
Oh, God.
No, that makes it like 3 levels bad. Number one, they're way too young to be doing that DX chop. Number two, you don't even know who these people are that you're representing. Right, like you don't even know if someone has said to me, "Who's Shawn Michaels?" I mean, if they're a kid, I mean, like, come on, man. Oh God! But so you saw kids doing DX chops?
Oh, I can't believe it. Yeah, your podcast kept going through my head about what you said. I'm like, this really look weird. Now I'm really looking at it. Little kids doing the suck it and.
Because, oh, I mean, God. Back in the night, like, there was a massive implication of, obviously, we all know what it's implying. Back in the Attitude Era, it was even more explicit, but the meaning has remained the same, and you're having, like, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old, 10-year-old kids doing this DX chop, and at first, you're like, haha, that's funny, and then you're like, actually, this is kind of disturbing. It morphs into disturbing pretty quickly.
Then how long they had it on. They had it on for, like, over a minute. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yep.
And they did John Cena. They did John Cena's You Can't See Me. And they gave a lot of Stone Cold promo. Massive amount of Stone Cold promo.
Meaning, what do you mean?
Like he got shows, like 2 shows on the WWE Network. Then the flashbacks. They did like WWE flashbacks. It was all Stone Cold. Like everything was Stone Cold.
Yeah. Well, that's I don't hate that. I mean, just if I can... Yeah, oh, like that's fine with me because I can pretend that, like, you know, because they'll play his music in the background and I'm just like, oh, that'd be so freaking awesome if he was actually here right now. And this is the closest I'm going to get to actually having him be here, even if it's just in a promo, a pre-taped whatever. Yeah, I mean, he is doing a ton of shows. He's doing his Stone Cold, you know, Takes on America or something. And he's got so many irons in the fire. For sure. Yeah, but I would agree with that. I don't care. They can fill every commercial break with a Stone Cold segment. I'd be fine.
This young girl next to me, she said, "Oh wow, he's insane," because they were looking at Stone Cold throwing the beer inside the ring, spraying it with a beer truck. And I said, "You didn't see nothing yet. Just just go to WWE.network and go look up Stone Cold. You ain't see nothing. That was nothing."
That's very true. Yeah, they played that exact same clip for us last week because it happened in the arena I was in. And it just adds insult to injury for me because I was the one show I'd never went to for Monday Night Raw, and it ended up being the number one segment for Raw ever during the Attitude Era. And I'm still extremely bitter about it 23 years later. But it happened in Albany, New York, and very angry I wasn't there. But very, that's awesome. So Are there any other segments or things that happened during the show that you wanted to comment on, just kind of like an open floor?
Let me think. They did the John Cena DX. Undertaker. And that's about it. They really didn't do like too much.
Sign of the Night. Probably did they do like Sign of the Night, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
Sign of the Night. Yep, they did the Sign of the Night. And it was like I said, mommies all day. Somebody had a good mommy one that was real impressive. I forgot what he said. It had me laughing. I forgot what it said. I got to think about it, but it was
That's
nice.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, so did they announce when they're coming back? No, nothing.
I don't understand this, and I'm going to say this now. Anybody in WWE magically watching this right now, the headquarters is located in Connecticut. Why do we get one show or two shows a year? What?
And you guys sold out the building here. I mean, so it is kind of hilarious. Yeah. How far is Stamford from Hartford?
An hour, less than an hour, 55 minutes.
That's nothing. Okay. Yeah. All right. So yeah, it is kind of weird that they don't visit more often, but usually what they'll do is, since you got a Raw, the next one will either be an actual televised SmackDown or a house show SmackDown. I'm imagining that's how you recognize the pattern as well. So you'll probably get something SmackDown related next time.
Yeah, yep, December.
Yeah, that's what I'm aiming at too. Because they'll hit Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. They hit Hartford. They hit usually like New York City, Albany, like and Boston. We're all in that kind of loop of the Northeast. So we probably have at least until around Christmas time, somewhat until they come back. But cool. Well, very good. Before we go, of course, I want to give you an opportunity to plug your YouTube channel and mention anything else you want.
Yeah, my YouTube channel, youtube.com/ThomasFrankWhite, or they got the new app thing, @WhoIsFrankie. I post all WWE shorts, reactions, my thoughts. I do it all, you know, every single day. It's something new, so tune in. And like I said, if you're watching it from one of my subscribers, what's up? Let me know in the comments that you hear, you know?
Awesome. Yeah, very good. I recommend checking out his YouTube channel, guys. Very entertaining and on the rise for sure. No doubt about it. So very much appreciate you coming on, my friend. It's always cool to hear what happens in person, what all the little nuances and the things maybe WWE drowned out that happened at the show and the things that, you know, we didn't see on camera. It's always a great perspective. So thanks so much for coming on, man. And we'll be in touch.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.